Hello and welcome to the Swiss Info Programme. I'm Jo Fay. Type Heidi into a well-known search engine and the little Swiss orphan appears third behind Heidi Klum, a German former model, and Heidi Montag, an American television personality. When it comes to staying power, however, Johanna Spyri's character is the clear winner. The plucky little alpinist first appeared in print in 1880, had her first cinematic adventure in 1920, and has rarely been off television or cinema screens since. In this programme, Thomas Stevens talks to the Swiss makers of the latest big screen adaptation and finds out how hard it was remaining faithful to the book while making the film interesting for audiences used to computer-animated blockbusters. We also look at reasons for the enduring worldwide popularity of the unwanted orphan, who's sent to live in the Alps with her cantankerous grandfather. She ends up not only rekindling his lust for life, but also helps her wheelchair-bound friend to walk again. Oh, and there'll be multiple spoilers.
That is the sound of nostalgia. At least it is for me. As I was told by more than one person during the making of this programme, every generation has its own Heidi. As a 40-something Brit, when I think of Heidi, not something I do that often, I admit, I think of Katya Politin, star of the 26-episode television series from 1978, which had that memorable theme tune. The BBC broadcast all 26 episodes in the early 1980s, when I, and many classmates, would get home from school, turn on the TV, and watch a badly dubbed tale of what life used to be like in the mountains. This was our first exposure to Switzerland. We didn't know where it was, but we knew it had beautiful mountains and goats. Lots of goats. In fact, the 1970s was a good decade for Heidi fans. In 1974, Japanese animators created Heidi, Girl of the Alps, a 52-episode anime cartoon which triggered a Japanese love affair with Switzerland that continues today. Around half the 100,000 annual visitors to the Heidi village in Mayenfeld, where Spyri's novels were set, come from Asia. If you listen carefully to this clip from the first episode, in which Heidi and her aunt Dieter hitch a lift up the Alp with a local farmer, you can hear the words Heidi, Dieter, and Mayenfeld.
Yeah, Heidi! なんだね、こんな時間に大変な格好して。おばさんを待ってるの。出ておかい?
あら、トマスさん、おはよう。よ、早バイト今日は何じゃい? ベルフレ行くの。どこまで?
わしはマイエンフェルトだ。あら、じゃあ乗っけててくれる? ああ、いいとも。さ、ハイジ、このショールを巻いて、ほら。
So Heidi is a global phenomenon. Bollywood even got in on the act in a 1958 musical version. But there's more to this winning formula than glorious scenery, a cheeky but cute girl, and a happy ending. Although those factors certainly don't hurt. Ingrid Tomkowiak is a professor of youth literature and media at the University of Zurich. I asked her why Heidi films remain so popular.
Der Heidi-Stoff hat, denke ich, ein paar...
Heidi has a few stock themes. The relationship between town and country is a common literary theme. And orphans are a really popular theme. So is getting healthy again in nature. There's the traumatized grandfather, who is saved to a certain extent by his grandchild, or somehow guided back into society. This so-called savior child is another really popular motif. Children who save their parents' marriage or patch up the family. And in fantasy literature, you've got children who save the whole world. There's a whole list of motifs that pervade literature and don't become unmodern or uninteresting. Regarding Heidi, that's certainly important, but there's also the fact that the Heidi books have already enjoyed major international success. Once a subject has established itself, it's easy to latch on to that success.
Dann ist es leicht, immer wieder daran anzuknüpfen an diesen Erfolg.
The list of fictional orphans is indeed huge. Annie, Tom Sawyer, Frodo Baggins, Mowgli, Harry Potter, of course, countless Dickens characters, not to mention many fairy tale figures. Why do writers and readers love orphans so much?
Waisenkinder haben für Autoren natürlich einen Vorteil.
Orphans obviously have an advantage for writers. They're not integrated into a family where it's clear that parents dictate the rules. Instead, they have to fend for themselves to a certain extent. Usually, they're not going to stay where they are forever. They're sort of in transit, Everything is open, and they have to forge new relationships and struggle through life. They're looking for a home, and while searching, they have to prove themselves again and again in the face of setbacks. This situation alone gives the author loads of possibilities for exciting episodes, or even for a real adventure structure.
Tom Korbiak also said orphans were good identification figures for young readers. She quoted Freud, who said children often dreamt about living with other parents. In these dreams, their real parents are not, in fact, their parents. Their real parents are socially better off, for example, nobility.
This means that children can identify very well with these orphans, who are searching, exploring, and meeting all sorts of interesting people. Children can sort of participate in the adventure that these orphans are having, even if there's suffering involved, like with Oliver Twist. He really has to put up with a lot before he discovers, at the end, that he's a rich heir. But young readers like having the chance to empathize and suffer with another child.
Ingrid Tomkowiak, a professor of youth literature and media at the University of Zurich. But what Heidi lacked in parents, she made up for in sheer energy and optimism. Petra Volpe, who wrote the script of the latest big-budget Swiss version of Heidi, told me what interested her most about the story.
When I read the novels, I was deeply moved. I haven't read them as a child. I grew up with the German television series and with the Japanese mangas, and I found something in these novels that I hadn't seen in other Heidi adaptations. And Johanna Stieri is an extremely precise writer. She writes in a very plastic way about poverty in Switzerland, about the harshness of life in these times in Switzerland, and also how hard the life was for little children and orphans. They were basically just shoved around and nobody wanted to take care of them. And also the characters are extremely three-dimensional and ambiguous. It's not a very black and white world she describes. It has a lot of gray tones, and for that it's very complex and very challenging also to transport that into a screenplay.
Today's children's film market is crammed with huge-budget, special-effect-laden offerings such as Frozen, Minions, Shrek, Ice Age, and Harry Potter, something Volpe was fully aware of.
The biggest challenge was really stay true to the material and not be seduced to want to make it more flashy and more action, because, of course, I know what children watch today, and I thought, will children want to watch this very modest, actually very almost intimate, not very action-rich story? But I had moments where I added more adventure and goats almost falling down the mountains and them saving the goats. But somehow it was always like sort of dropping out of the atmosphere of the actual story. And I always had to remind myself what was the thing that I was interested in and what did I relate to, and to really trust that and go for that, even though it can't compete with Pixar, you know, and it can't compete with films that have, like, fantastic things happening.
However, Volpe felt some compromises had to be made.
A very important element in Johanna Spyri's novels is religiosity, like to be religious, and she prays a lot, and she helps convert people to find God, Heidi as a character. In almost the whole part of the second novel is a lot about she converts everybody. She talks about God all the time and how, you know, and the doctor finds God and Clara's father finds God and the grandmother finds God, like everybody. And I couldn't relate to that at all because I'm a atheist. And I also thought, it's complex with Johanna Spyri because she was a child of her time and her mother was deeply religious, but there is also a spirituality in her that's beyond Christian religion, and it's her connection with nature, and the characters she invented have a very deep connection with nature, and there's something divine in nature that's beyond words. So I thought I want to focus more on that, that nature becomes some kind of a spiritual place for the girl, where she also finds a place where she belongs and where she can be herself.
Screenwriter Petra Volpe. So this generation is getting an authentic but secular reading of Spyri's novel. This is in contrast with earlier interpretations, such as the successful 1937 Hollywood musical starring Shirley Temple, which reinforced Switzerland's image in American eyes as a mountain paradise, although none of the film was actually shot in Switzerland. As the critic for the New York Times noted, the film contains all the harmless sweetness and pretty pictures one expects to find on the juvenile shelf.
I like to hear the church bell, don't you, Grandfather?
Get to bed.
Shall I say my prayers out here with you?
I told you to go to bed.
Yes, Grandfather. I think I'll go to bed now, Grandfather. Good night. God bless Grandfather, and please make him like me. And please make me a good little girl. Amen.
There was also Switzerland's first Heidi film, shot in 1952, which kept the book's religiosity but glossed over its more critical passages. The cute girl living an idyllic, morally simple life in a mountain paradise was the dominant image of Heidi for many years and continues to be used by advertisers in the tourism industry. In the 1980s and 1990s, however, directors started to turn away from this view, which they saw as politicised. In 2001, Marcus Imboden radically modernised the story, setting the film in the present, with a blue-haired Heidi spending most of her time in an internet cafe. It wasn't a huge success. Alain Gersponer directed the latest Swiss Heidi film. But it's not the first time he's had dealings with her. As a student in 1998, he made a short animation on Johanna Spyri's heroine.
The first time I was mocking the image of Switzerland, which really sold itself using Heidi and this cozy, idealized world. It was a satire. In reality, the novel told something else. It is much more a social drama, which makes an issue of the existential problems of Switzerland at the time. It was important for us to show with this film that people in Switzerland suffered from hunger and that others, such as the grandfather, were ostracized. People led very raw and isolated lives. It wasn't just this comfortable world.
Changes in society also posed technical challenges for Gersponer, who in post-production had to airbrush out electricity pylons visible from the beautiful village of Latsch in eastern Switzerland, where the 1952 film was also shot. Stubborn Goats also stretched the crew's patience, but the end result has been a critical and commercial success. There are also plans for the film to be distributed in English language markets. Coincidentally, Heidi came out within a few weeks of a very similar Swiss children's classic, Shell and Ursli. The story of little Ursli and his adventure looking for a bell, it's more exciting than it sounds, was filmed just around the corner from Heidi. What I wanted to know was when Heidi and Ursli were going to pair up on screen like Marvel's Avengers or the Batman vs. Superman film.
Unfortunately, in the German-speaking world, we're just not as open to bringing characters together in a film. That's a tradition that seems to come more out of Japan, where, for example, Godzilla and King Kong could come together. Hollywood is also much more open to that. Here, we still have this problem that if we use material that belongs to a brand, we just have to treat it very seriously and respectfully. There's also this heavy demand that we don't betray and defile the brand. The viewer, as the censor, is still there, much more so than in the Anglo-Saxon world.
Alain Gersponer, director of the latest Heidi feature film.
You can read more about the continuing popularity of Heidi on the big screen, including more comments from the people featured, online at swissinfo.ch. This programme was produced by Thomas Stevens. Thanks also to studio technicians Daniel Wieler and Ivan Steiner.